Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show hosted by high school students in Mendocino County, California. I am the producer, Dan Roberts. Today's show is in two parts. First, there has been an alarming increase in vaping nicotine by young people. Then, a replay of a show we did in 2011 on veterans. We will begin with an attempt at a Socratic seminar with students from Laytonville High School in February 2020. The topic was how to deal with the rapidly increasing number of students who are vaping nicotine. Many schools report that over 50% of students are vaping on a regular basis. Laytonville High School has locked the bathroom doors during classes because many students were found to be vaping while on bathroom pass. The administration is trying to find ways to stop students from using nicotine during school. Around 30 students were in this room for the recording, so it is pretty chaotic, especially given that a number of them vape and some have been reprimanded for it. You will hear references to puff bars, which are inexpensive replacements for vaping products formerly made by Juul. 5 years ago, very few high school students were using nicotine products after years of anti-tobacco education. Today, many see a health crisis developing. This seminar was arranged and led by Natalia, with support from the principal, Mr. Henry.
So the question today is, how much of a problem is nicotine at school, and what should be done about it in and outside of school? But the ground rules for Socratic seminars, this isn't an argument. Like, I don't want it to be, this is my opinion against your opinion, we're going to figure out who's right. You know, like, it's not the point of this. So I'm going to read the text, and we're going to go in the inner and outer circles. So basically, I'm going to ask you guys a question, and you just say how you feel or what your opinion is on it or your perspective, and just have conversations with everyone around you. And the goal is to hopefully come to some sort of conclusion or idea about how to make things better. But the main idea of this is just to talk to each other and understand your guys' perspectives and understand maybe Mr. Henry's and other people's, because even though it's a small school, we all have a lot of different stuff about ourselves. So just consider everyone's viewpoints. Let everyone talk. Don't talk over other people. How much of a problem is nicotine at school, and what should be done about it inside and outside of school?
When it comes to, like, it being a problem, I personally haven't noticed it being a problem around the town. Not really, but I'm pretty sure it might be in, like, areas I haven't gone into the town in yet. But, yeah, it doesn't seem to be a problem so far. It is a problem, but it doesn't seem to be one so far.
Maybe
not one concerning me.
Just for conversational purposes, maybe we can define what a problem means.
Yeah, what do you guys think would make it, like, a problem?
When it's affecting people's lives or other people's lives.
Something
like, that's when it becomes a problem.
They're so affecting people in a negative way.
Do you think that
nicotine
is negatively affecting people's lives?
Yes.
Drastically here right now?
It would definitely.
What if you need it?
Drastically.
Yeah, not drastically.
What do you need?
It's not like a bomb went off or something. It's like people are smoking. It's a problem.
Yeah, it's a problem.
It will gradually become worse, but it's not, like, that bad right now until
It's really bad right now.
I'm saying it's going to get bad when someone gets actually hurt.
When it really comes down to, like, the problem, as long as it doesn't concern me, it's none of my business.
Worst thing that's going to happen, you need to get too lighthanded.
Okay. I agree with that.
You
got a selfish man here.
Is it a problem, like, you're worried more for people's health, or do you think you're just worried about the fact that people are getting addicted to something?
I'm kind of worried about mentally as well, because why would you even, start doing it unless you're...
It's a personal choice.
Does anyone have the issue because it's, like, physically harming people? Like, anybody?
I think that's the thing.
Oh, when it comes to physically...
Has there really been any situations where anyone has been physically hurt by this? Like, has this physically hurt anyone? Like, I've never heard of this physically harming
anyone. Like I said, gradually.
It's killed us.
There's pop.
Like, I don't keep up with, like, this at all.
I feel like it hasn't affected anyone because they just started doing it. I'm like gonna wait like 2 or 3 years to wait how the students end up.
Do you think that this is gonna last, or do you think it's more like a phase?
No, it's totally gonna last.
Well, I just wanna say that when smoking was a big thing, it lasted for, quite a few decades. So I feel like it would be a phase, but it's still a long phase. Like, it's still quite a few decades.
It'll end eventually. What about specifically, like, puff bars? Do you think that's a phase, or do you think that that's going to continue?
I didn't even know those existed.
I feel like it's a phase.
Didn't the company
shut down? So why do you think the
Puff Bar is a phase? Because I feel like
people just started using it and I feel like they're just going to get tired and something new is going to end up coming that's better than that.
Just like an iPhone.
And are going to start using
bread. People are going to wait for the next product.
Okay,
this is the big thing right now.
Let's talk more about how the school's involving themselves. Do you think that they're doing a good job trying to stop kids from smoking nicotine?
Shutting down the bathrooms during school, during like class periods, was just the worst choice because if someone needs to like go to the bathroom, if someone's having an emergency in the middle of the class period,
I don't think closing the bathrooms is
just
not good.
I feel like closing the bathrooms is making it worse.
It's just going to make them more prepared.
You said we were all smoking nicotine.
As a school, a lot of communities in this, like, groups in this school speak as each other as a family. That's been a big thing throughout this school. When people go in the vape at school, you're not only hurting yourself, you're hurting the whole school. There's people who got to go to the bathrooms, and you're getting rid of that.
Hey, don't you guys think, like, there is also a portion of people that don't smoke nicotine at the school? Yeah. And if you're a person who does not, how do you feel that that's affected you?
Well, we all know that there's a select few that smoke.
Cool. And they might be
it's
at the table right now.
Look at this, okay? It says that 90% of one group had smoked nicotine at least, like, multiple times.
Yes, that is true. But the audacity to smoke at school and getting caught smoking at school, I feel like it would be fair to take away their bathroom privileges instead of the entire school.
So you think that it should be individuals can't go to the bathroom?
That seems to have been a problem with almost every school that, like, throughout the entirety of Laytonville, I've noticed that they don't handle individual people, they handle it in groups, so they just get it done with. It just seems lazy and ineffective, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, one thing can...
Like, if someone, like, pushes someone off a cliff, you're not going to also blame the person who got pushed off the cliff and every person in a 10-mile radius. Stupid idea. And it's going to end up with a lot of people in jail and a lot of legal problems.
Do you agree with that, or are there some people who think you should just deal with it as a group?
I think the bathrooms is a terrible idea.
I think the bathrooms being locked is
I feel like out of those 90% of people, if you're actually going to say 90% of people in one grade have tried vaping, I bet you 80% of those also do it everywhere else but the bathroom. Like, in class and wherever is convenient.
Yeah.
It's just such a trashy concept. It's such a basic concept, the lock up the bathroom type.
I feel like not many people are going to go all the way to the bathroom.
Like, if people are smoking nicotine in class and also in the bathroom, how do you think an individual punishment would be given for that type of stuff? Because if kids, it's a small thing. Like, puff bars are, like, this big. Like, you can hide it relatively easily, and everyone understands that you can hide them. So what do you think would be an effective way to individually punish someone for something like that?
A suspension would probably just make him happy.
Yeah, you just give him a time off.
It's like, yeah,
so
go home,
we were actually talking about, one of the things is the school board's trying to propose that the suspension for getting caught for nicotine goes for the same for weed and alcohol, so it'd be 5 days instead of one day, and also all the punishments that the other stuff gets instead of it being less. Do you guys think that that's fair, or that you should...
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they should stop trying so hard to get people. That's what I think.
I think that maybe in-house would be better for, like, a day. Like,
getting in-house and going and sitting in the office, it's like, you get to hear all, like, the drama. Like, you're not really being punished by sitting
in
the office.
It's punishment.
No, it's... Oh, yeah.
I say in-house with Janice.
I believe that one, too.
I agree with that.
That's very smart.
Yeah, because she
is on the dot.
Definitely.
So you guys
like a
do think
a backpack,
suspension is a fair punishment? Like, you don't think that that suspension, like, you think that you think it's another thing that someone should have to do, or do you think that suspension is, like, what the punishment should be? Like,
I just think
just
it's
something
funny
other than
how much
you guys
care.
Or do you think that suspension is fair for just people that get caught?
When it really comes down to it, the one thing that I would have to be is, like, an after-school detention, because not only are you staying at the school, you're staying at the school longer.
Chris, what was that?
Community service.
What kind of community service do you think would be, like, beneficial?
There's things that they can do, like they could go to Healthy Start, and maybe they'll learn something educational as well as they're doing their community service.
Trash. I don't know.
Yeah.
So trash, is there anything else for the kids that would rather honestly die than pick up trash? Like, do you think there's anything else, like, in the community that they could be doing? What would you guys want to do? If you got caught for something, what would you think would be, like, something that would actually help you in the community but also be kind of a form of punishment?
One of the things that we look at with Socratic seminars is
referring to the text. So as we look at this, there's a lot more than just, you know, how many people may be doing this, but also, you know, what are we dealing with? What are the ill effects of this on people's health? And also, like, you know, what will be the end result? Do you think that there's, you know, when this is all said and done, people who are going to be highly addicted to nicotine? I mean, when you know, Natalia's asking about, like, how much of a problem is it, I think addiction is one side of that, right? I mean, you know, in terms of, like, referring to the text, like, what stands out in this? And what do you think of that?
I mean, more so, are you guys, like, worried for people's health, or do you think it's more of, like, they're just making big deals?
It's kind of a personal choice.
It's like I feel like
it's a personal choice, and you can try so hard. Like, if you catch someone with it, you want to get them in trouble, like, suspend them for a day or 5 days. I mean, I think that's fair.
If you can.
But, like, I don't think you should try and go to so much extent, like, locking the bathrooms. You know, or doing whatever else is. What else do you do? What else have you done to try and prevent it, besides locking the bathrooms?
So far, the only thing we've done.
No comment, he said.
Can I bring something up?
No, but sorry, you want chocolate?
Okay. You said, what are we doing to prevent it? I don't know if locking the bathroom is the idea to prevent or to help people. I think it's just to eliminate places where they can do it secretly. I think we're thinking that reasons for others.
Is that your reasoning?
It's complicated. When there's stories about people who are literally having these things put to their face when they're in the bathrooms, you know, I think that's a pretty big sign that yes, that is happening. And I think sometimes it's just a way to disrupt the handing off of these devices, or just to, you know, disrupt the rhythms of this. I mean, it's been done randomly and only during class time since December. So I don't think that's the real big issue here, you know, the bathrooms. And I think that, yes, it's true, like, you know, locking the bathrooms does not solve the issue, not at all. I think education is a big part of it. But also, like, you know, looking at the sourcing and really, like, trying to find out, like, you know, what's behind this? Why do people do this? Like, how does it start, you know? I think that understanding...
I also think if you're going to lock the bathrooms...
Why do you think people are smoking nicotine so heavily?
Because
they're addicted.
They want to try it, and then they try it, and then they get addicted.
So, yeah, they want to try it. They want to try it, and then they get addicted.
Well, they advertise it in a way that it's, like, specifically towards children or, like, teenagers, too. So it's appealing.
Mango
flavor.
Everyone likes mango.
Not just
teenagers.
Everybody likes mango.
I hate mango.
Nice. But what I wanted to bring up earlier was the fact that some students are still getting targeted after they've quit, like 6 months later, and they're still being searched and targeted specifically for that.
Do you think that, like, because some kid gets caught smoking nicotine or has some connection with nicotine, now they're, like, on the hit list for, like, forever, you know? Do you think that's unfair?
I agree.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah. Well, it's just like a normal thing. That's how it goes with anything. Like, whenever you get caught once doing something,
you gotta,
people are going to suspect you.
Yeah, I somewhat agree and disagree with this idea. The fact that you're getting searched multiple times, like, I can agree just, like... Oh, like, say you get caught, like, December, and you get checked, like, every, like, for a year. And if you're free for, like, the entire rest of that year, you should be good to go. You shouldn't be, like, for the rest of your life on the hit list type of deal.
Have you guys ever experienced, like, a pressure to do it? Like, especially for the people that haven't done it. Do you feel like people, like, be differently? Do you think there's a big space between the people who smoke nicotine and don't smoke nicotine?
No.
Or do you think it's just, like, people do and people don't?
I think it's people do and people don't.
I don't think there's a big space between it. And do you think there's, like, a social repercussion at all for smoking nicotine?
No. It should be, everybody's like, oh, you want to try it? You want to try it? You want to try it? But if you don't want to try it, then it's, like, not a big deal.
Yeah, this town hasn't been a very pushy town.
So what do you feel when you take a hit of nicotine? How does it make you feel?
Does anybody? No one will be in trouble. This room is not even in here.
Like a 5-hour
great.
Greatness.
Lightheaded.
Why do people want to use nicotine?
a stress reliever. I don't know.
Yeah. Flavor, okay, but
I don't say flavor.
Flavor.
My experience is that it grounds me, makes me feel more focused. I mean, that's what nicotine does, you know, it can get your blood vessels and stuff, it kind of sharpens your brain. Anybody has that experience from using nicotine?
Nobody?
Yeah.
I don't
even
know
what
to use it.
I think maybe 90% people might be worried about testifying to their nicotine.
No one's going to test. No one's talking about it.
10%.
Okay, but it's an important point because there is a reason, besides being suckered into it by the companies that make the product, there's something about nicotine. Your parents, my parents, parents going way back, everybody was addicted to nicotine. Why? Maybe that's a key to, you know,
people
the problem.
Know about it. Not people knew about, like, cigarettes, like, in the 1920s. Everyone thought it was cool. You know, it was, like, good for you, and they thought it was healthy for you. And so after years and years and years of research, they told you, no, cigarettes are not good.
But then they're already
addicted.
So.
But we don't.
Yeah, but they don't care.
But then that's when they make puff bars that are more appealing, and they're scented, like, whatever flavors they have.
Yeah, they made puff bars because cigarettes were going out of... No one was buying cigarettes anymore because...
People still buy
cigarettes. I remember how bad they were. But
a lot less
than they used to. I know. So they started using these to advertise because everyone was going off cigarettes to get the nicotine, you know,
like,
the industry.
But still, like... It's like... Yeah, people don't really know that much about puff bars now. Like, we don't have that much research to see if it's actually bad or good.
I didn't even know they existed.
It's really bad for you, though.
And they're made in Sichuan, China. I mean, in Sichuan. So
everything's made in China.
Really?
So it's not just tobacco or nicotine. It's glycerin and, you know, other artificial ingredients. So it's synthetics.
Formaldehyde.
Yeah.
Benzene and arsenic.
That's what they found when they tested
these things.
Haven't noticed anyone interfering with vapes and such, but I do know that it's happening around the school because there's a lot of reports on it, and that's just like, oh, so it's happening, but I don't see it.
Does anyone have a different perspective to that? Do you think you do see it and you think it's a problem?
It's a massive problem.
Why is it a massive problem?
Because I feel like people that I used to know that were really smart, their grades are dropping. They're being less academic. They're dropping out of sports. It's just ruining people. It's just terrible.
You can tell somebody's vaping by just having a conversation with them. Because originally, before they're vaping, they have like a way different personality, and like they're just a total different person versus when you're talking to them when they're on vaping. They're just way more cranky. They're just a whole different person, and it's not their better self.
Does anyone else agree with that?
I agree with that. So you get, like, irritated easier because we're like, ooh, I want that.
Especially when you knew everybody before they started vaping versus now. It's like, oh, you're an asshole now. Before.
In the vibe of the school, like, since vaping's only really hit since, like, y'all freshmen came. So do you think, you know, the vibe of the school has really changed since then? I mean, some of the freshmen obviously haven't experienced as much, but for the upperclassmen or maybe the older people, do you think that it's changed at all, or do you think the only addition is just the fact that people smoke nicotine more? How has the vibe of the whole school changed since nicotine and vaping become more prominent?
So there's
people,
like, they get caught more.
That and, like, people are, like, rude and want to fight other people.
People are rude and want to fight other people.
I feel like it may have spiked since the freshman classes got here, but people were doing, not puff bars, because I don't know when they came out or anything, but people were doing other stuff like this before the freshman class got here.
People
were
smoking nicotine
at
the high school. Yeah. I have never experienced anyone getting suspended as much as I have this year. Tiny amounts.
Yeah. Almost
my freshman
no
year,
people,
I don't remember
people,
anyone.
People shamed everybody for smoking nicotine.
I thought
it was shamed.
I wonder.
It was very much.
Yeah.
Like, if people smoked nicotine when I was like a sophomore or like
when
a freshman, like it was not cool.
People
like, there was
hated
a social
it
was there was a social thing about it. But like, do you guys think? So do you think that the only change is just, like, people are more angry now, or, like,
upset about it? Do you think like just like the energy of like the classrooms have changed at all?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you think that's changed?
I can look over at somebody that's randomly and they're already hitting their vape.
How does that, for the people that don't smoke nicotine, if you see someone in class like hitting the puff or something, how does that make you feel in the class environment?
Guys, I don't know why, but like, with the reports suddenly skyrocketing as soon as this year started, could it have been possible that us freshmen brought in a different culture?
Do you think that that has happened? Do you think the freshmen have brought in a different culture at all?
Like, I think it's freshmen and also some of the sophomores.
Freshmen and sophomores.
I'm just gonna throw it out there. Just gonna throw it out there.
But it's like,
so do we think that it's not really done by upperclassmen, juniors and seniors?
I think it is done by them, but the culture shifts, I think. Because I don't know.
They're smarter.
That's why everybody switched over.
They started it at school.
3 years, we've ruled the school. Nobody's going to tell us to try and stop or anything.
We're almost done.
Yeah, that's why we don't really mind. If we get caught, we get caught. We don't really mind. We just do it to do it.
Seniors are smart enough not to bring it to school.
With like the upperclassmen, do you see like, if the upperclassmen say we're smoking nicotine more, do you think that would affect it? Or do you think if they were like, no one, like all the seniors and juniors like, smoking nicotine's gross, and all of the underclassmen are disgusting, do you think you would continue to do it as much, or do you think it wouldn't matter at all?
I feel like people would want to stop if they said that, but I feel like they couldn't because they're addicted.
You don't think people that are addicted can stop?
I mean, some people, but like, a majority wouldn't be able to.
Do you guys agree with that? Do you think like, people that are already addicted
it's
now
not
can't
change? It's not that they wouldn't be able to. It's because they wouldn't want to. Things that people were saying about them, they wouldn't really care. If they were talking crap about people, they wouldn't care. They'd just keep doing it. Even if their friends, like, I know most people at this school, and even I'm noticing people are changing. Like, within months, people have been changing, and I just, it's bad. People think it's not bad, but it's bad, and it needs to stop in this town.
You can't even help them either, because every time you're trying to help them, you're saying stuff that they don't want to hear, and they have a mood swing and try to fight you or something.
So do you guys think that, like, people who are addicted to nicotine, like, are too far gone for, like, their friends to help them? Like, they need something professional? Or do you think that it's more so, like, they need professional help, or do you think that like, the school or, like, your friends could help people through it?
I think it depends on how long you've been vaping. Because, like, if people, like, just start vaping, then they're not that addicted. It's just, like, the way it feels.
Yeah, like,
but, like, if you've been vaping for, like, years, then, like, you're going to be like, oh, I don't care. I'm going to keep vaping because I've been doing it for years and, like.
Eventually, one of us is going to die. Like, and that's going to open everybody's eyes. Or they're going to go to the hospital and get extremely sick. And everybody's going to think that's a joke until it really happens. And it's going to open everybody else's eyes. Like, oh, that's going to happen to me, too, if I keep doing it. You guys probably don't realize how extreme it is until it happens to one of your friends.
But think about that. How many people are going to look at that and say, yeah, that was due because of vaping? If they're addicted, they're going to look at every other fact that put them in the hospital besides the one that's actually staring at them.
Well, most of them is just like healthy, fine kids that you want to expect them to be in the hospital. So they're like, how is he in the hospital? You can tell when it's a completely healthy kid that goes straight from, you know, just going outside and confined and going to the hospital and looking pale.
But at the same
time,
that healthy kid could also take nicotine in a worse way than, let's say, another person does. His body could have a worse reaction to it than somebody else's.
Yeah, but I think if someone died, people would die.
I'm just saying, like, putting them in a hospital, a kid can take two puffs off of one and still be going when somebody can hit it for a year and have nothing visual wrong with them.
For a year? For 1 year?
What does the Inside Circle think about the change in policy from the penalty of this currently being 1 day suspension or in-house suspension to 5 days and the 30-day extracurricular suspension? I mean, it's a lot different. Like, right now, if I have to weigh out, like, well, if I'm bringing these maybe to sell or to whatever, like, if you're weighing it out, you're like, the worst thing that could happen to me is to be an in-house for a day. But this changes things, and you're like, you're off your sports teams for 6 weeks, and it's, you know, it's a lot more extreme. Will that change people's calculations and what they do?
No.
I
speak out one at a time.
You guys don't think so?
I feel like
Some people just like, if you suspend them, they're like, thank God, they get to be home for 5 days.
In-house.
That's
in-house.
A lot of in-house.
And then they can just vape like twice as much.
In-house.
Yeah, I can get in more trouble. They're making money
that same mentality.
Kind of off their hands.
Especially now that they're in trouble, they're not going to care and they're going to continue to do it.
So do you think kids wouldn't be scared of getting a 5-day suspension as opposed to a 1-day suspension?
Not exactly the 5-day suspension, but not a, like, sure, a lot of people do sports, but there's also a lot of people who just don't do sports, and the 6 weeks away from sports and such won't affect too many people, and probably they won't care.
It's 2/3 of our school.
Two-thirds of our school are
involved at any one time in extracurricular activities.
Okay, that's a lot more than I was expecting. Sorry. And how many people are enrolled at the school?
120.
Obviously, if they still bring weed to school, well, that's the same penalty. They're not going to care about a puff bar because that's way easier to hide than anything like weed.
Like, you can smell the weed, you can't smell the puff bar.
Yeah,
you can. I mean, it's not the same as you can smell weed.
But it's just like, it's just like a nice scent, so people just don't really think it's passed by it.
I feel like kids would do it because they've, like, heard stories of their parents with, like, cigarettes and other drugs before this, and they're like, oh, I want to be like my parents, and then they do it.
I feel like they're doing it because, like, the upperclassmen. Like, the upperclassmen have done it, and they're just trying to fit in with everyone, so that's why I
think. Do you think it's a do you guys agree that it's a result of the upperclassmen? Or it's, like, to be
cool for them all in the upperclassmen?
Perhaps,
like, maybe they saw a meme about it or something on TikTok or whatever, and they're like, oh, whoa, that looks like a cool, let's do it. And the next thing you know, boom, it's an epidemic. Here we go.
I don't think it started from freshmen.
Yeah.
I think it started from upperclassmen. Just like one or two that hooked freshmen, and then all the freshmen started getting their own, and then they started. But I think it all was originally from that upperclassmen.
It was last year I remember nicotine, but there were never, I didn't know that puff bars existed until this year. I know upperclassmen did smoke nicotine last year, but it was like two or three people, and everyone was like, that's bad, don't do it. Like, I had friends that did it, and like, I was really, like, weirded out by it. And then once this year it happened, and a lot more people started doing it, I just saw that it just got more like, no, people stopped caring because it was such like a large quantity of people were doing it, that it stopped being like a care for people anymore. Like, it just kind of like, do you guys think that you just stop caring because it's not worth caring about? Because it's just such a big issue that it's just too out of your hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Do you feel like these statistics, looking at this this letter here, you know, it talks about the incidence of e-cigarettes increasing 135% in the last couple of years, and then do 50% of the student body here use nicotine?
In the classroom or in the school?
Whether it's at home or at school. Do you think it's over 50%?
Yeah, I think it's over 50%.
Seven school?
I feel like over 50% use it, but 10% use it at school.
10%?
Well, that's
no, that is
more than
10.
I think more use it at school than I say
more people
six,
use like
90.
Yeah, more use it.
What
would we use it at school than at home?
Afraid my pops catch me.
Do you guys agree that more people use it at school than at home?
Because people that don't have them will use their friends at school. Not everyone has one, but their friend might have one at school, you know.
Have you guys experienced anything from your parents at all? Like, any, like, have they talked to you about
nicotine?
Yes.
No.
Multiple times. Right. Can someone talk about some conversations they've had with their parents?
Last night, my dad walked in and was like, you hear about this nicotine thing going around school? I was like, yeah. A bunch of idiots for doing it at school. If you want to do it on your own time.
My mom said she'd kill me if she caught me smoking, or she killed me that she found out that I was vaping.
Call CPS.
Damn.
She would call CPS on me.
That's not how that works. Child protective service.
She's gonna be like, come take my child away.
She's threatened to do that. She's threatened to do that to me if she ever found out that I was vaping at school, and I promised her I would never do it.
Do you think that stating that she would kill you was an effective way for her to speak to you about it?
No.
She's killing me.
I'd be like, bet.
I was like, I don't do it anyway.
One of the things that the last group talked about is just like what to do about it. And they, you know, there was obviously a lot, you know, none of the kids are into the bathrooms being shut down. That's understood. What What do you think should be done about this?
Just confiscate it. Don't get him in trouble. If you see him, you got a suspicion or something, they catch him with it. Don't give him like 5-day suspension because that's just stupid. And then maybe just take it from him. And then let him be.
I agree with him.
Just let him be. I feel like this will be popular, but searching every person before they come into school will stop it. Guarantee a thorough search.
You know how long that would take?
Very quickly.
Logistically, I'm not entirely sure if searching each individual student before school would work entirely well. Although it is an idea, and I appreciate that. It would be efficient.
It
would can't logistically do that. Because people are late to school, some people don't show up to school. People are going to intentionally not show up to school if they think they're going to get searched, which is just going to lessen the population of
students. Or they could just not bring it to school. And not
I mean, or if you get caught with it, just smash it on the ground in front of them.
Do puff bars have metal in them?
They can be detected.
He goes through a metal detector.
What's your takeaway from this conversation, or are you just any closing comments? Go ahead.
Let's keep it short.
Everyone who got caught vaping, like, they have to, like,
do
a play.
Do not just
take... No, it was her idea. But, like, they gotta, like,
public humiliation.
It's embarrassing in front of the whole school.
Public humiliation. Make them do an interpretive dance in front of the entire gym or something.
Or just, like...
I like that.
Sing, and then I'm just like...
Just like the two parents in the room, like an empty gym, and then the stage.
Well, I mean, they do the shaming thing at like stores when they're caught stealing.
Like,
so I,
some of my friends
like instead of going
it,
to jail, you just get embarrassed.
If you see someone doing it, you shouldn't just like let it be. Like it's okay. You should say something.
Like so, student self-policing.
Be like, what are you doing? Like this is stupid. Just like you know, like people who like are athletes, be like, don't you want to like go somewhere out of Laytonville, like to go do something? Like you're not gonna be able to do that.
If you just let everyone have uptown lunch, then they would go do their smoking at lunch off campus, and they'd come back. It
won't
be a problem.
There's some parents talking about wanting to shut down Uptown Lunch altogether.
What?
All right, I'm sorry. Let's.
Chris,
as a result, that's one of the things on the table.
Think about it. If you guys get caught with puff bars and like nicotine and all this stuff, you can't expect to have all your privileges that you had before.
Exactamente.
It shouldn't be through punishment, though. It should be individual.
Well, I mean, like, Uptown Lunch is a privilege from our school. Like, they don't have to let us go uptown. So,
metal detector, if you're going to go uptown, you have to be checked to make sure you don't have a vape on you or anything like that.
Yeah, but that takes up, like, your whole lunch.
Thank you, everybody. We'll do this again soon.
You are listening to Youth Speaks Out. Dozens of programs from the past 20 years are available for streaming and download at our website, youthspeaksout.net. Next, we will hear a rebroadcast of parts of a show where Laytonville High School students interviewed military veterans living in the area. This particular show has been downloaded over 30,000 times and aired on over 100 public radio stations. This program was first broadcast in 2011 and was hosted by Laytonville students Paige, Mitzi, and Caitlin.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. Today's hosts are me, Mitzi Pearson, and...
Caitlin Wiley.
And Paige Polson.
We are students at Laytonville High School. Laytonville High School, along with Anderson Valley High, took part in the Veterans History Project this spring. In 2000, the United States Congress created this project to preserve the remembrances of American war veterans and the civilian workers who supported them. These collections of firsthand accounts are archived in the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress for research and inspiration. The project compiles recollections of veterans who served in World War I, World War II, the Cold War, Korean War, Vietnam War, Persian Gulf War, as well as the Afghanistan and Iraq conflicts. Laytonville High School was invited to contribute to the project by Congressman Mike Thompson. 30 of our students interviewed 20 area veterans. All of this material was sent to the Library of Congress. Heading the project at Laytonville High was English teacher Rick Kale, along with Lindsay O'Neill from Healthy Start. Our media specialist Chris Shelton produced two DVDs of selections from the interviews, which is where we got the audio that we will play for you in a few minutes. Both the students and the veterans found the project educational, emotional, and a valuable communication across generations. The three audio clips that we will play for you are all from Vietnam veterans. It is good for young people to listen to the experiences of community members who have experienced being in war. These veterans talked about the lessons they learned from their service, as well as the after effects that still persist. Memorial Day was celebrated last week. The holiday was first observed as Decoration Day in 1865 to remember the fallen Union soldiers of the Civil War. Over time, the holiday has become Memorial Day, a day of remembering the men and women who died while serving in the United States Armed Forces. Fortunately for our community, the three Vietnam veterans that we will hear survived the war. We thank them for letting us hear their stories. We will begin with Tom Evans, who was interviewed by Paige Polson and Shana Maxwell. Tom served in the Army, working in aircraft and flying combat missions.
How old were you when you went to war?
20.
20?
Mm-hmm. Are you scared?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What were you scared of?
Dying. Mm-hmm. Whatever, you know. You know, when you're that age, you got everything in front of you, and you think you're indestructible. And it just ain't that way. And my experience had all been from war movies about World War II and Korea. So you're watching it on, you know, it's just not real. But in our mind, we make it real. And the reality of it is you spend 99.9% of your time bored, stiff, but extremely scared because you never know what's going to happen. You just never know. So being on edge like that kind of takes a toll, you know, stress. So that's been my experience. Every day, every night, it's there, and it never goes away. There's a song, I can't remember the artist, excuse me, and I'm really not even sure of the title of the song, but it's about a Vietnam vet that came back and was dealing with the demons, and his statement in the song is that nobody should have the visions in their head that I do. Nobody. You know, that's not what humanity is about. But we decide to go the opposite direction.
So when you say demons, do you mean just the images that he had seen?
No, I think the demons are more the conflict that goes on inside of me all the time about what I did. My actions. And as I look back on it now, you know, I think, God, that was disgusting. They would send out inspection teams to look at these aircraft and make a decision. Are they going to go for repair to Japan, where Bell Helicopter and the military, the Army, had a big repair facility, or are they going to go back to continental United States, to Corpus Christi, Texas, or Pensacola, Florida, depending on the amount of damage done to the aircraft, to be rebuilt and then reassigned. Our original assignment was to facilitate the transportation of these inspection teams. So we were assigned to the Army Material Command at Cameron Bay. And supposedly, we were just going to go out and fly around these teams. The military was always, always short of everything. So if we were not assigned to go look at specific aircraft, then we were an available aircraft if they needed to fill in some other mission. Then we could be taken. So pretty much we spent most of our time flying combat assaults or combat support. Call it the fog of war, when all this stuff goes on and you kind of go on automatic and don't really understand. And I kind of think that sort of applies. You know, you have your training, you know what you need to do, and if you're quick, you know instinctively what to do if the situation is beyond the scope of your training. And we call it field expediency, you know, knowing how to get your ass out of a situation that's really not in the book. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to kind of go on instincts. Your experience and your instincts, and especially in aviation at that time, there was a whole lot of that.
That was Tom Evans speaking about his experiences in Vietnam. Paige, what did you learn and feel from interviewing Tom?
Well, when I interviewed Tom, he just being able to talk to him in person was an amazing experience. He has a lot of knowledge, and he taught Shayna and I both a lot. One thing that I took from interviewing him was the satisfaction of life and how much of a gift it is. Being able to talk to somebody who has had their life in jeopardy and been at the point of almost dying and having to hear about that, it's really sad, but it really makes you appreciate the life that you live and the fact that we, as young adults, get to make our own decisions, and we don't have somebody or something like the military telling us what we have to do every second of the day. So that's something that we should cherish.
Next, we'll hear a part of the interview with Terry Wilcox, who served in Vietnam as a medic in the U.S. Air Force. Brett Harwood and I conducted this interview.
So how did you adapt to the Air Force life after, you know, growing up as a civilian, going to high school, straight out of high school, you?
Adaptation wasn't that difficult. It was more a mindset than anything else. And I understood the mindset after a while, after about 3 months. And so by the time I left Lackland, I was sort of, I guess as much as possible, I was in harmony with the way the Air Force did things. I think I adjusted fairly well at that point. I was doing okay. I felt I was doing what they wanted, so that was all good.
What kind of relationships did you create when you were in the Air Force?
Some very good ones. Some of the people I worked with, some of the other medics, nurses, even some of the people that I went to medical school with, Basic Med, it was called, at Greenville, Mississippi. Good relationships, pretty much. In my experience, there wasn't time to dwell on negative aspects in relationships. Most of what I ended up doing as a medic, I learned by doing in what they called the OJT, on-the-job training. We pretty much worked alone on that shift. There was one more medic, but we each worked individually because there were so many casts that needed to be cut and medications that needed to be given and, you know, getting the guys ready so that they could sleep for a little while. That was the first place they'd been in a bed since they came to Vietnam. They were always on the ground in my facility because they were wounded again. Typically, a Lance Corporal that was 19 years old was the point man, and he was the one that hit the booby trap because he was usually at least 100 yards ahead of the main group. So he's out there by himself, and whatever there was out there, he would run into it first. And the other guys would be a little safer. Not a whole lot, but some. So typically that's the guy that I took care of was that Lance Corporal, 19. He was always a little bit older and a little bit more experienced than everybody else in the unit. But there's certain things that nothing can help, you know. So, yeah, it was a regular thing. That was the most common way of getting wounded in Vietnam. What we used to call the enemy did not want to kill us. They wanted to maim as many people as they could so that energy and expenses and manpower would have to be spent on all this work that we did, which I was part of.
That was Terry Wilcox. Mitzi, what stands out in your mind after hearing that interview with Terry Wilcox?
Well, after hearing him talk about his experience, we learned that every single veteran has to live with what they saw in the war or what they went through and what their friends went through. And that's so hard not to be negatively affected by all that. And they just, the rest of their lives, they have to live with the fact that they either killed someone or they saw someone being killed. And it's so hard to live through that and not be wounded for life or scarred.
Does that make you appreciate life more?
Yeah, it definitely made me think about how teenagers right now have it so easy, and you should really appreciate how easy your life is before you have to go out in the world and either get drafted or do other things.
Yeah, have it taken away from you in a split second.
Mm-hmm. Next, we will hear part of the interview with William Womack, who served as a sergeant in the U.S. Army in Vietnam. William was interviewed by Caitlin Whiteley and Casey Notaro.
The hardest part was coming back home and the treatment we received from the American citizens. That was harder than the war. Well, when you're 18 years old and in the Army, you know, you're still like a high school student in a lot of ways. But you learn very fast, and the drill instructors help you learn very fast, that you have to get along, and that petty differences aren't acceptable in the military. If you don't get along, you can't fight, and if there's no unit cohesion, you'll get beat.
What went through your mind, before, during, and after combat?
Well, you know, it's a little different the first few weeks of combat, and once you get settled into it, what goes through your mind? Because I don't know anybody that wasn't scared to death for the first few weeks, if not months, until you became accustomed to what was going to go on. It's pretty hard to fall asleep the first couple of nights when you think you could die any minute. Well, I saw a lot of people doing things they would never consider possible. And that's one thing about the military and about combat, that you'll find that you have reserves of energy and stamina that you never thought you had. And as you get older and you go through life, it's hard to believe, but this combat experience helps you sort through a lot of the BS. After that, we transferred up to Camp Eagle and I Corps up on the North Vietnamese border to assault the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Laos. That was January, February, and March of 1971. And out of 600 helicopters, I think 500 were shot down or destroyed. So we didn't win that one. But our unit did receive some presidential citations for assaulting the Ho Chi Minh Trail, things like that. Because the whole idea behind that mission was to sever the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which was supplying supplies and men to South Vietnam.
How did it make you feel coming back and knowing that everybody's mad at you for going to war? How did you cope with that?
A couple of suicide attempts. Lots of alcohol. That's how I coped with it, and that's how most Vietnam veterans coped with it.
Happy to be home and know that you're safe?
No, I didn't feel safe. as soon as I came back from Vietnam, they took my best friend away from me that I had every day, 24 hours a day, an M60 machine gun. And now I have all these people coming at me with bad words and actions, and I don't have anything to defend myself.
Did you learn any important lessons that you still use today?
Yes. And I think the biggest lesson that I learned is my government will lie to me, it'll lie to you, it'll lie to everybody. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Sometimes I guess it's justified. It's not with me. And killing, you know, it's justified, I guess, in war, but you gotta live with it. And it's tough to do. Well, I just think this is a... I want to compliment you ladies for what you're doing here. I think this is great. I think you're promoting patriotism and all kinds of good stuff, and you know, make lines of communication where there have been none,
yeah,
which is very important. And I've already discussed this with my BFW back in Garberville, and I said thank you very much from all the members there, too.
That was William Womack. Caitlin, what insights did you gain by listening to William speak?
William taught me a lot about respect. I didn't have a lot of respect. Well, it's not that I didn't have respect for the veterans. It's that I didn't know how they were treated. But listening to William's story made me realize that they were never told thank you. He's never, ever heard those words in his life. He's heard words of hate and regret, but he's never heard the words thank you, and he's never had any respect. And it was important for me to personally say thank you. And, like, I don't get why people don't say thank you. He had his reasons for going into war, and it was a time that it was needed. It's not his fault for what the government was telling him to do. He was just doing what he was asked. And so I don't get why other people, like, don't understand that. It's their life, and they have their reasons to do things, and they do it for them, not for everybody around them.
Has that made you appreciate a lot more the, like, Army and Navy that's fighting for us right now?
Yeah, it's made me appreciate a lot more and realize what they're really doing.
But do you actually know what they're really doing, because the government does mask their events with lies?
I don't know, like, what they're doing, but I know that they're doing what they're told to do, and that's all that they can do. That's all that they can help themselves to do.
Right. They have no choice, so we should respect it.
Yeah.
Did the veterans make you think that people your age are the ones fighting in the wars? Is that fair?
Did we understand that they were our age when they were fighting?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. When I was interviewing Tom Evans, he stated that, or he asked us, can you imagine what it would be like seeing people die in front of your eyes and have nothing, you can't do anything about it? And when he asked me that, Shayna and I just sat there and we didn't have anything to say because we've never gone through that. And I can't imagine ever having to go through that. Being 18 and having to see someone die or taking the life of another person would ruin me.
The emotional stress that it has.
Right. I would probably cope with it the same way that Caitlin's veteran did because that's scary. I'm not sure how anyone could actually live through that experience and be sane.
And, like, Caitlin, do you think it's fair that the younger generations are leaving for war and the older people who have lived more and had longer lives are the ones that probably aren't risking their lives?
Everybody has a time that they are needed, and if the government or whoever needs the younger people, if they need those people, then I think that it's fair for them to serve. But people with more experience might be better adjusted, but I don't know. It could go both ways.
Yeah.
When I was interviewing Tom Evans, he had told me that if they were drafting men and women into the war that were over the age 50 and they took nobody else, there would be no war. And they said that, or he said that they take the younger people in the world because at age 18 through 25, that's when you have your strongest sex drive. And that is the strongest hormone that you possess. So they take that sex drive and they twist it and convert it into a killing drive. And that's what the government does. And that's really scary. They're smart. That's the scariest part.
What other kinds of things did you guys take from your veterans? Like, was it hard to listen to them at some point?
Caitlin, go ahead.
It was hard for me to hear William say that he had 2 suicide attempts. Like, that was really hard for me to, like, hear. And just to see him sitting in front of me, like, made me respect him and made me, like, proud to be interviewing him.
That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Laneville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project is proud to support this month's Youth Speaks Out. Our Environmental Prevention Strategies in the Community, also known as EPIC, is a project funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Through our organization and coalition, we are working towards reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laneville community. If you're interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Laneville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email jayma@laneville.org, jayma@laytonville.org.
Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this radio station. They're the views of those who express them. Youth Speaks Out is free to rebroadcast upon notification. Our shows are posted monthly at our website, youthspeaksout.net. You can find our podcast link there or on iTunes. Thanks for listening.